I'm up on the tight wire.
I'm sitting across from my good friend Benjamin Alirasan.
And I'm sitting across from my good friend Daniel Chacon.
And welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire,
brought to you from Studio B.
And today we have on our show poet Shanat Karasa, who's going to talk about her new book, Conjuro.
She discusses in her book the different spaces that she's lived in, from Jalapa to living on the East Coast, then moving to Kansas. It's very interesting how when you move to different places, you start taking on kind of the language and thinking of that space.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, when I lived in Louisiana, I started saying Cher, because everyone says Cher. And I started kind of speaking a little bit Cajun-y.
Oh, yeah?
And I wasn't even aware I was doing it, because you just take it on. And I remember one time, too, when I was in Roswell, New Mexico. And Mexicans in Roswell speak with Texas accents.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really interesting
right,
to me.
Right.
And they say, "How y'all doing? I'm Ben Garcia." And they talk like that. But it seems normal. It's not so much that they're not, that they drop their Mexicanness.
Right, right.
It's just that they just start talking and taking on the speech
Absolutely.
Of the places where they live.
You know, I remember when I first moved to El Paso, I came here from California. In Central California and Northern California, we all say hella. Like, man, that was hella cool. Did you see that? That was hella, hella cool. And I would say that a lot, and people would, you know, someone would look at me and say, "You're from California, aren't you?" And I'd say, "How do you know?" And then I realized that was a very California thing. And so I remember one time me and a colleague went to San Francisco and had dinner with a bunch of friends of mine that I knew when I lived there. And they were saying hella every sentence. And it was so odd to hear it. But they don't say it in Southern California.
So one has to wonder whether we speak the place or the place speaks us.
Oh, and you know what else we have to wonder? What things do we say because we live in El Paso and on the border?
And those things are often invisible to us.
You know, one thing I do notice, when I sneeze in California, people don't say bless you. When I sneeze in El Paso, 10 people, anyone in hearing sight, turns to me and says bless you.
Well, we're very polite here in El Paso.
Stick around, and we're going to talk to Shanat Karasa about her new book of poems, Conjuro.
Stay tuned.
Shanat Karasa is a traveler, educator, poet, and short story writer. Originally from Veracruz, Mexico, she lived in Vermont and Kansas City. She has an MA in Romance Languages and lectures in Foreign Languages and Literatures at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Her full-length book of poetry, Conjuro, is from Mammoth Publications, and her chapbook, Corazón Pintado, Ekphrastic Poems, is from TL Press. Shanat, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you very much. It is my pleasure.
And we're here to talk about your new book, Conjuro, which just
Wonderful.
Recently came out. Lovely cover. Who did this cover?
It's a friend of mine. He's a painter and a good friend. He actually did both covers for my books, Corazón Pintado. His name is Jesús Chan Guzmán. He's originally from Chiapas, but now he lives in Jalapa, Veracruz. And he's just amazing. I love his work.
And you're from Veracruz yourself, aren't you?
I am from Veracruz. I'm from the capital of the state of Veracruz, Jalapa, where jalapenos come from. That's me. Yes.
Well, that makes sense, because your poetry is so musical. It's almost like listening to the music from Veracruz.
Wonderful. Yes, I think that it's reflected in my poetry, the music, the sounds, and the landscape, yes.
I have a double question for you, and they're related
yes.
to each other.
Uh-huh.
From Veracruz to Jalapa,
yeah,
to the East Coast of the United States,
mm-hmm.
and then you went to Kansas City.
Yeah.
That journey is not just a physical journey. It's also a linguistic journey. Can you tell me how those moves change the way you speak and the way you write?
I think since I've been living in Mexico, I've been living in between, I always say, between worlds, between languages. because my mother grew up bilingual between Nahuatl and Spanish up until she was 8 years old. And we always visited my grandmother. And at home, we also lived with my aunt, who was also bilingual between Spanish and Nahuatl. And then when I moved to the U.S., that was like reinforcing what I was already aware of, but on a third level. You're right, it's not just a physical journey, but it's a linguistic journey. And I teach languages, I teach literature. I've been always writing, and I've been teaching creative writing for a long time. And I'm very much aware of languages and how we express, how we are able to express some things in certain languages with more emphasis, so because we connect more directly to our feelings, in my case, Spanish, and then English, which is now my second language, my new world in a way. Yeah, and it's reflected in my writing, and I always explain to people that I first write in Spanish, and that's where my feelings are. That's how I breathe. That's how I feel. And once I have revised what I want to show to the public, to the world, then I start my own translation.
At what point in your life did you learn English?
Well, I started studying English in Mexico, because sometimes we need to study languages, right? And then I have a degree in teaching English as a second language, actually 2 degrees that I got in Mexico. And then when I moved to the States, I was functional in English, but once you're immersed in the languages, it really pushes you into another level, especially feelings and details and subtleties, right? And I'm still in the process. I mean, learning a language is an organic thing. I think you never stop learning a language. And language is it's alive, so it changes. And it's very interesting because some things that I learned in Vermont is like, okay, now I'm in the Midwest. Okay, so that's great. I think it's wonderful, yeah.
Did English change your Spanish?
I think a little bit. I'm becoming aware of that. I think my sentences are getting shorter, but at the same time, my English is very much Spanish-like in a linguistic structure. So I think it's a combination. I move between languages. Sometimes I caught myself thinking, how would I say this in English when I'm writing? And I stopped that editing process. I said, just let it go. I'll find out how to say it. So I'll deal with that later.
We're talking to Shanath Karasa, author of 2 collections of poetry. One is called Conjuro, and the other is Corazón Pintado. Shanath, we interviewed you at AWP. Ben and I saw you. You came over to our table, and you read a bit of your poem. And I remember the refrain was, Yanga, Yanga, Yanga. Uh-huh. And as I look at your poems, and both of them, actually, a lot of them almost seems like an evocation of a prayer or a spirit or something like that. Is that an accurate statement? If so, or even if not, do you sometimes when you're writing find yourself falling into some sort of trance that takes you out of your body?
I think that for that particular poem, that's a very, very unique poem. I think I've been wanting to write about Janga for a very long time. And he's a historical figure that is not very well known all over. And if you're from Veracruz, you know about him. And it's a very important historical figure. But for that particular poem, I wanted to write it for so long that I tried and tried. And then when I met Luis Reyes Rivera and I heard him perform, I was like, okay, that's what I'm looking for. Those are the rhythms I'm looking for. I was so inspired by Luis Reyes Rivera that poem in particular I wrote in one shot. And yeah, I think I'm invoking Janga in that particular poem, yes. But that doesn't happen all the time. That might be my only one poem that I wrote down in one shot and I didn't edit. Hmm. But it's not the same case for the rest of the book. No, I edit a great deal, yes.
So you don't sometimes find yourself writing and then you just kind of like look up and hours have passed and you didn't realize that you had been inside the language that long?
Yes, 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 that happens too. I have a kind of a specific schedule. I get up really early. Sometimes I write, sometimes I just make notes, sometimes I read a little bit here and there. But yeah, sometimes that happens. I start writing and suddenly, oh, yeah, it's 10 o'clock after 4 hours or something like that, yeah.
Did you study poetry or how did you come to write poetry?
I've been lucky enough to be around books since I was very little. My father has been a great influence for me in terms of poetry. He loves poetry. I don't remember exactly when I started reading and writing, because my father is a doctor and he's also a teacher. So he used to teach in a Unitarian school in a little town outside from Jalapa. So I used to go with him. I think that's when I started learning to write and read. And then suddenly I remembered just reading. And he was kind enough to introduce me to poetry. Lots of poets, and suddenly I just fell in love with poetry, yeah. So I think that's how my mind started to get involved with poetry. And I think the first time I produced a poem was when I was about 6 years old, of course. it was with a pink marker. It was about the stars. I gave that poem to my wonderful aunt, and then I think she lost it, but that's okay. But seriously, I started publishing when I was, I think I was 18 years old in Mexico. You know, we have those newspapers where they have the cultural section, and every Sunday they publish something. So I started submitting, and for a year they published me almost every weekend. I don't know how I did it, but I have my old newspapers, all yellow, but they're still there. So,
would you say then that you were, in a way, self-taught as a poet?
I guess my BA is in philosophy, so yeah, I think I always read. Well, you should just bring me a book and I'll read it, read everything. So, but yeah, I think I've been self-taught in a way. But however, I've been teaching creative writing for almost 10 years now. Mm. I teach here at the UMKC a class in creative writing in Spanish. But it's prose, it's short stories, and it's an introductory class for non-native speakers of Spanish, which I adore. And we explore poetry too. But yeah, I guess I'm self-taught, yeah.
It's interesting that you grew up around the Nahuatl language, using the Nahuatl language, and clearly some of your poetic influences were Aztec poets, Nahuatl poets, and you have a particular poem called, and I'm going to probably mispronounce this and have you correct it, Makuitsotchitzin.
Yeah.
Which is, who was a female poet. Can you tell us a little bit about her and her influence on you?
Oh, definitely. Well, Makuitsotchitzin is another a historical figure and literary figure lost in history. And Miguel León Portilla, who is a great researcher of the Nahuatl culture and who has published a great deal of books, more than 20-something books, has one book in particular that I adore. When I read it, it was Trece Poetas del Mundo Nahuatl. Now he has a new edition that's 15 Poetas del Mundo Nahuatl.
Found two more,
it's
huh?
Great. Yeah, I know. He researched a little bit more. And at the end of the book, I remember when I read the book, he was inviting the readers to research, to do more research on these wonderful poets. I remember I started crying. And of course, I was reading through all of them, but Makuitsotchitzin in particular caught my attention because she's the only female pre-Hispanic poet that we know about. And there are other two that are recorded, but however, we don't know their names. Because Makuitsotchitzin, we know her name because we have only one poem that she wrote to celebrate. She was very, very clever. She wrote a poem, was not a love poem, right? It was a chronicle of war. And she was the daughter of Tlacaelel, who was the minister of war for Moctezuma. So he had this wonderful battle he won, and she recorded that. And that was the reason why it survived, because it was a chronicle of war. And the other two women, we know about them because one is a lullaby, and she mentions herself in the lullaby. The only thing we know about her is that she is a she. And then the other one we know about is she was a mistress of one of the lords of Tlaxcala. And she was very cold. She was very well-versed. She wrote poetry, but that's all we know about her. We don't have any poems. We don't know her name. But from Makuitsotchitzin, we know we have a poem. We know her name. I mean, it was just great to learn about her. I'm very much, as you can see, interested in learning about female poets, too, because it's important for me to see other female models as poets, yeah.
Do you translate any Nahuatl poetry into Spanish?
No, I don't. I wish. The translator was Miguel León Portilla. He's a researcher from the Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México. So the book, 15 Poets from the Nahuatl World, it's already bilingual between Spanish and Nahuatl.
Your book, Corazón Pintado, has been described as an ekphrastic poetry. which essentially is poetry that uses art as its subject. And it seems like the covers of your books are very, very meaningful to you. They're very beautiful and very colorful images, paintings. I suppose you're in love with visual art, with paintings and with colors and...
You got me. Yes, I do. I'm very visual, definitely. I try to connect with people who are represented here in the covers. I selected carefully the covers. Jesús Chang Guzmán is just an incredible, incredible artist. And I've known about him since I was in Jalapa. And I always said I want to buy one of his paintings. And I do have both of them, both covers are there in my home. And I asked his permission, and definitely, yeah, it's his art is just amazing.
What other painters move you?
The ones that are in Corazón Pintado, for sure, Israel Nazario. He's just amazing, too. I happened to be in Oaxaca, and I was giving a reading. And that was very interesting because he was part of the audience. So at the end of the reading, he just approached us and he said, I would like to invite you, all of you poets, to my studio. And I said, yeah, sure, let's go. He's Mixtec. So Mixtec is one of the indigenous people in Mexico. So we went to his studio. And I was just amazed with his colors and his designs. And I knew I was going to write about him at that moment. Mm. And I went back to my friend's house where I was staying, and that night I was just dreaming about his paintings. I called him the next day. I said, I'm really sorry, Lazario, I never do this, but I need to write about your paintings and I use your images. And he said, that's okay, because I've been writing poetry, so yes, you can use it. So that was very nice. He's one of the contemporary painters that I think I really enjoy, but of course, I have other friends like Esther León. She's also a Oaxacan painter. She's great. She's amazing. And, of course, the traditional painters of Rivera, Botero, all the Latin American painters, and some of the U.S. Latino painters, too. Yeah, I'm very much a visual person.
A lot of artists are influenced by artists, and somehow it makes their way into their work. But there's another thing that's really important because of your journey from Veracruz to Jalapa and then to the United States. How does that landscape affect your work?
Well, sometimes I just write what I think I need to write, but then I realize it's reflecting the landscape. And I think in Conjuro you're going to see, and also in Corazón Pintado, if you read carefully, you find landscape which is very much jungle-like, very humid, lots of water, lots of moist in the atmosphere. That's where I come from. That's where I grew up, Jalapa. In Jalapa, we have rain every day. We have fog, we have mist, we have drizzle. We have chippy-chippy, what we call it. It's like drizzle. Now, here in the Midwest, I have poems that are specifically about the Midwest, the prairies, the green, the Flint Hills, and this is my new reality. This is my new world.
Your whole book, Conjuro, is in English and in Spanish. You said you translated yourself. Have you ever wanted to let somebody else translate your work?
Most of my work I translate by myself. I've been working with other two translators, thank goodness. And for my upcoming book of short stories, I needed to work with other translators.
Right.
It was just too much. And it's very hard, you know. People don't realize how hard it is to do literary translation. People assume just because you speak of both languages, it should be automatic. It's not. At least not. It's
right,
not the
right.
case.
And most of the great writers in Spanish never, even no matter how good they were in English, like Borges, for example, didn't mm-hmm. translate their own work.
No. You have to be detached of your own work. Mm. So it's like recreating and rewriting the whole thing. I have to be detached enough to be able to do that, but at the same time, I'm still connected to my work.
But it's true. I was once asked to write a poem for a workers' rights center that opened up in Juarez. And they asked me to write the poem and then present it in both languages.
Right.
And I wrote the poem in English because that's my dominant language.
Right.
And then when I came to write the Spanish, I didn't translate it. I wrote an equivalent poem.
That has happened to me, yes. I always tell the story of this one specific short story that I wrote originally in Spanish, And then they asked me to translate it. So when I started translating this story, I started editing myself. And then I realized I was translating from English into Spanish, and it was a total, I'm not sure what language I started writing the story. So yeah, that happens. And I have to be very careful because I sometimes end up writing a different poem. But that's good. I have another poem. Okay, yes.
That's right, because, you know, languages say different things.
Oh, yeah. Structures and the words and the way you phrase things and the verbs. Yeah.
We're talking to Shaneth Carranza, author of Conjuro. We're running out of time, but we'd love it if you would pick one of your favorite poems out of this book and read it to us.
Okay. Do you have a favorite that you would like me to read?
Well, actually, the one that I really like is the Conjuro poem.
The title poem?
Yeah.
Okay. So I can do that.
And do you want to read it in English or in Spanish?
I can do both languages.
Let's try it.
Okay. Conjuro. Conjuro de ángeles, demonios y duendes. Que hacen que la tierra se desgarre, que el aire gima y grite entre los árboles. Conjuro de dioses y demonios que hacen que mis pensamientos vibren. Oh fuerza bruta, implacable que suena y sacude cada rincón de la tierra. Temblores internos, temblores externos que se hacen uno y quiebran la tierra. Hoy te conjuro para que despiertes del letargo que te mantiene cautiva. Hoy invoco al norte, sur, este y oeste. Hoy te conjuro a ti, guardiana de mi sueño. A la canción de cuna que se oye a lo lejos. Al origen de mi sangre, de mi vida, de mi dolor. A la guardiana de mis noches más oscuras. Conjuro tu nombre aquí en mis pensamientos. Spelled out. The spell of angels, demons, and duendes causes the earth to tear. May howls and screams among trees. The spell of gods and demons unsettles my thoughts. Oh, brutal strength, unrelenting strength that resonates and shakes each corner of the earth. Inner quakes, external quakes that unite and crack the earth. Today I call on you to wake from the deep slumber that holds you captive. Today I invoke north, south, east, and west. Today I cast a spell on you, keeper of my dream. To the lullaby that is heard from afar, to the origin of my blood, of my life, of my pain, to the keeper of my darkest nights, hearing my thoughts, I put a spell on your name.
That was Shaneth Carranza
reading the title poem of her book of poems, Conjuro.
Shaneth, thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
This week on Poetic License, our own Ben Sines is going to read some reflections on summer.
I walked to school one day this summer. It was late morning and I felt the heat almost immediately as I walked up Oregon Street toward the university. By the time I reached University Avenue, my T-shirt was stuck to my back, my eyelids were dripping with sweat, and I thought that walking even the few blocks to my office had been a very bad idea. My neck and the back of my head and hair was wet with my own sweat. I thought of turning back, taking another shower, and then driving back. And then I thought, well, I'm almost there, and so I kept walking. When I walked into the liberal arts building, I was grateful no one was in the hallway. I snuck into the men's room and dried myself off as best I could with the common, cheap, and scratchy brown paper towels that were the staple of men's rooms all over campus. I looked at myself in the mirror and thought, well, it's summer. I got to thinking later that day that I'd have to walk home in the heat again. And then the thought crossed my mind that I hated the heat. I thought of summer days when I was a boy, and I wondered why it was that the heat was not something I even thought about back then. I used to walk barefoot to the store to buy a Coke when I was 15. The hot pavement would burn my feet, and I would run from one piece of shade to another piece of shade, as if I were playing a strange and crooked version of hopscotch. I would buy a bottle of Coke, take a big swig like a street alcoholic would swig on a beer. Then I'd pour a bag of salted peanuts into the Coke and watch the Coke sizzle and foam and drink down the peanuts and Coke as I sat on the hot sidewalk. I'd walk back home and listen to the radio and read comic books with my brothers. Our bodies littered the living room as we read. I loved summers when I was a boy and loved them even more as I grew older. Summers meant heat and leisure and cut-off jeans and going barefoot and loitering with friends and drinking a Coke and going to the river with someone who had a car. It seemed a time that I was free of worries. But then again, that wasn't really true. There is no such thing as a time that is free of worries. I worried about lots of things. I worried about all the pimples I had on my face, and I had so many. I worried about the fact that I wasn't growing as fast as I wanted to grow. I worried about the war in Vietnam and tried to picture myself as a soldier slinging a rifle. I worried about the future, my future, and wondered what would become of me. And then, of course, as I grew older, summers weren't about leisure time at all. Summers became about work. Picking onions in the heat, that was not exactly what the Beach Boys sang about. Being a gopher for men who roofed houses, my skin turning golden in the sun. I remember at the end of the summer, I walked into a store and the cashier asked me where I'd been. Did you spend the summer at a beach in California? Did you go to Mexico? I smiled and shrugged. I didn't want to say that all I'd done was work in the sun with a bunch of guys who spoke a broken form of Spanish or a broken form of English. Another summer, I worked for a janitorial service. I had to be at work at 5 in the morning. We cleaned bars that reeked of cigarettes and beer that never smelled clean, no matter how much pine soil we used to mop the filthy floors. All I wanted to do after work was sleep. But it was hard to sleep in the afternoon in a house full of boys who were in love with fighting with each other. Summer days were not quiet days. Summers. Those days when summers meant work, I yearned to go and return to school. Yearned for the life of the mind, for books, for classes, for desks, for libraries, for homework. Summer is a season we like to romanticize about. But like every season, its presence can be cruel. But its presence could be also kind. There is nothing more beautiful than a summer rain in the desert. This summer, there was not enough rain again. One evening this summer, I sat on my veranda and watched as the rain came down, and I felt as alive as I have ever felt. The thunder and the lightning, they reminded me that at any moment a storm can come along and shake you back into the world of the living. The heat of the summer can lull you to sleep, or it can wake you up from a long slumber. When I was a boy, I was not ashamed of my own sweat. I would like to summon that boy again and have him teach me the wonders of summer. But perhaps there is no path of return. Perhaps I have to accept that summer is a mystery that I will never solve. We'd like to thank Shanath Garasa for being our guest on our show today, and we'd like to thank you, our listeners, for joining us. And let's not forget to thank our producer, Norma Martinez.
The greatest producer in the world.
So join us next week for another edition of Words on a Wire. This is Benjamin Alita Sines.
And this is Daniel Chacon.
Reminding you that the next book you read
could save your life.
I'm up on a tight wire. One side's ice and one is fire. It's a circus game with you and me. I'm up on a tight rope.